You're listening to The Elephant Test. We're dedicated to the B2B marketing community and here to explore the practices, thoughts, and ideas of effective B2B marketing executives.
Hi, this is Sky Cassidy and Alicia Garvalia.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for joining us for The Elephant Test today. We're going to be talking about the crossover between employee experience and customer experience. And here to help us is Charles Rogel. Alicia, you want to take over and introduce Charles Rogel with a little bio?
Charles has an extensive background in international sales, marketing, and consulting, specifically in employee engagement at DecisionWise. Charles joined DecisionWise in 2004 as an account manager. He was promoted to the role of Vice President of Products and Marketing, where today he leads the DecisionWise marketing team. Thanks for joining us today, Charles.
Thank you. I can't believe I've been here that long.
2004. I don't know. It's only 13 years.
I know. Fine. Oh my gosh. Anyway, yeah, it's great to be with you.
I think I was entering high school.
Right. Yeah, a lot changes in 13 years.
not to make you feel old or anything.
No, my kids tell me every day.
So, Charles, we're here to talk about B2B marketing today, but specifically, you know, the employee experience, customer experience, and kind of your expertise over there. Can we start out by just kind of giving us an overview of where you came from, how you got into DecisionWise, and also your move up from, I think you said you were an account manager originally, up from account manager?
Yeah, that sounds like a really fascinating story of starting at the bottom and going all the way up.
Right, yeah. So it's not as glamorous as it might sound, I guess. I'm kind of one of those accidental marketers in a way where I kind of fell into this over the years. Started off with DecisionWise back when we were pretty small. We had about 5 employees when I joined as the first sales rep. And we've grown now. We've got about 40 employees and a few different sales reps and now kind of a marketing team. It's been a fun ride. And my need to learn and grow and do marketing came from my need to generate leads to sell. And so, you know, the whole cold calling thing quickly got old and I realized how ineffective it was. And so I started messing around with our website. I actually got access to our website where I could make changes to it and change some of the forms. And I got access to some of the paid advertising we were doing on Google. And so I was collecting names. And then from those names, I was calling people and trying to find opportunities and leads and convert those into sales. And so little by little, I just found that content marketing was working. And so I got the consultants and everyone that worked here to write me some stuff. And I started writing articles and started learning about SEO and how you could, you know, do keywords. And so our company does a lot about measuring employee engagement. We do employee engagement surveys for companies all over the world. And we do 360-degree feedback surveys for companies. And so those were the two keywords I started focusing on. Anyway, it just all grew from there. And now we've got somewhat of a marketing team. There's 3 of us here. And we do a lot of content marketing. We try to get people to fill out forms on our website and try to do all the best practice stuff that's out there. But again, it's been one of those things that I've learned on my own over the years and transitioned from a full-time salesperson to a full-time marketing person about 4 years ago now. So it's been a fun ride.
I think you'd be surprised how many people take that path. Right. That's actually, I'm very familiar with that. That's the same exact path I took into marketing. I was working in sales, managing sales, and then eventually, you know, your job is to say, how do we get more sales? And eventually most, you know, a lot of people, a lot of companies, probably the small to medium-sized companies, eventually that sales leader will say, it's marketing. We need more marketing. Yeah. That's how we're going to get more sales. So, and then that person ends up being the one pushing the marketing and running the marketing,
right?
Because you find out your salespeople need more leads, not more whipping, kind of.
Right. Yeah. You can hire so many salespeople, but without the leads or the, you know, people to call on, it gets difficult really fast.
I think especially in B2B marketing, we find a lot of people have a similar path to that because not many people, when they're asked what they want to be as a kid, say, I want to be a B2B marketer.
Right.
I feel like that would be a fun question to start with, was like, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Yeah, a B2B marketer.
So Charles, what did you want to be when you grew up? When you were little, what did you want to be when you grew up?
It's still difficult when my kids ask me what I do. They still look at me with this weird look when I try to explain it to them. And so I think they're starting to get it. But when I was little, gosh, I had no idea what I wanted to do. Even in school, it took me a while to kind of decide on a major. I did know I wanted to go back to school and get an MBA, and that's what I did a couple of years after I graduated. So, but I kind of, and in MBA school, that's when I started focusing on marketing classes more and really enjoyed that. So, okay. Had a passion there.
Yeah, I see you have a bachelor's in humanities first.
So I kind of stumbled into that. I served an LDS mission in Italy when I was 19. And so when I got home, I tested out of all these Italian classes at school. I went to BYU. And so I had all of these credits towards that fit into a humanities major really easily. And I liked studying that topic.
Right.
And it's funny, I always thought, what the heck am I going to do with a humanities major? I knew I was going to go get an MBA. But the good thing from it was all the writing that I did as a humanities major did help me later on in my career in sales, as I was putting together big sales proposals. And also, as I write content now for blogs and articles and things like that, it's really helped me to kind of think and write and get my thoughts together. So I do.
I think it's a lot like a philosophy major. Like you can do just about anything, a philosophy. You can do almost anything with it, or you can do nothing with it. It's just kind of up to you, but it really, it enables you to do a lot of things, but it's not specific training. It's not like you know how to fix people's teeth and you can be a dentist now.
I really thought you said basket weaving. I don't know why that's what I heard. I was like,
wow,
that's
you
really
heard basket
an
weaving.
Insult,
that's,
guy. Come on, guys. But yeah, I would definitely say the same thing is true with my major in both undergrad and grad school was communication, but it wasn't the kind of communication where you sit down and learn marketing or, you know, more like it was actually more like the philosophy of communication.
How could you possibly use a communications major as we sit here speaking?
I know, right? I don't know, especially with performance studies.
If I had to do it over again, I probably would have chosen communications as my major.
Ah, well.
But I don't regret humanities at all. I really enjoyed it, and I still benefit from it. So
good. And you got to learn Italian, so, you know.
Took some great classes. This is
possibly how you got your wife. You never know. I'm assuming that there's a female to the...
That's right, yeah. Married for 25 years now, have 4 children. My oldest is 22. She just got married this past summer, so it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, congratulations.
Nice. So, Charles, I'm kind of excited to talk to you about this stuff today because it's a subject that I don't know a whole lot about when it comes to, you know, the words are all familiar, I think, to everybody, but employee experience, employee engagement, customer experience, customer engagement. It's one of those things that everybody kind of has a loose idea, but I don't think they really know. You know, if you put on the spot, couldn't give you a definition
without using the words
of any of those things, or without just saying those exact words.
Right.
So, I can't wait to learn from you about this stuff and what it is. And I guess with that, I mean, you want to take it away? Can you jump into that?
Sure. Yeah. So first, what I'll do is talk about customer experience because I think that's what might be more familiar to our audience here of marketers. You know, we kind of deal with attracting customers and understanding. But once customers get in the door, usually marketers don't really think about them anymore because, you know, that's operations problem or customer service or whoever's over that. And so in our industry, we see, so there's been a lot of actually work around customer experience. It used to be just kind of like customer satisfaction, right? So you'd enter a restaurant, you might fill out a little 5-question survey that asks you if your food was warm, how quickly did you get it, if the restaurant was clean or something. And it's morphed and actually become quite important as things have gotten more and more competitive to understand that whole customer journey that a customer goes through once they purchase your product or engage with you in a service or whatever the case might be, especially in B2B, because there tends to be more repeat business, or maybe you're selling a year-to-year service that people sign up for. And so you're trying to retain these customers as well. And marketing still has a role in that retention and ongoing relationship with customers. So
more the flow through the process kind of than just the how was everything, but each step, each hoop they had to go through for the process, kind of optimizing it type of thing.
That's right. And part of the problem in customer experience today, or customer service, or customer satisfaction, is that it's been somewhat isolated in various buckets. And so first you measure what was their initial experience when they, you know, encountered your store or your website or whatever the case is. And then what was that initial sales call like? And then what was that initial implementation experience like? And so you might be measuring these things independently, but you're not really understanding that there's a whole kind of emotional journey that a customer goes through from the time that they see your logo the first time do they understand what your product is, to when they interact with your salespeople, to when they sign a contract, implement, and then even a 6 months to a year on into the relationship with you as a client. So understanding.
I love the way you say that. As an emotional journey, I really like that.
Yeah, and I think the journey thing, what I've seen is people like you who came from sales and then have the marketing, you have a great sales and marketing blend. And also the journey is something you're paying attention to, because people who started and stay in one area tend to just see their bucket kind of. And it's like, yeah, this is the marketing journey and it's gone, or this is the sales. Whereas you're interested in the whole path and then back around again and again and again.
That's right. That's right. So I guess
that's a unique history you have that really is beneficial for your position, not necessarily falling into the spot, but you know, somebody that just went straight into marketing doesn't have that.
Yeah, because I know, you know, as we work with customers to do their employee survey, and as I sold that package, it'd be very frustrating when a administrator or the customer service agent who was implementing the survey either did something wrong or didn't follow up or didn't pay good enough attention to the client, because then it was so much harder for me to renew them the next year to do the survey again or do any ongoing work. And so as a sales rep, you're really attuned to the whole experience and what they're going through. And that's why there's so many sales positions where they're kind of the customer relationship manager. They're going on site all the time, visiting with them, taking them golfing, you know, that whole piece, just to maintain the relationship and identify maybe areas where the customer experience is suffering in some way.
Right. There's sales where you're winning the sale, and then just account managing kind of where you're just,
you know, I've never wanted to be in sales, but the idea of going golfing as part of my job, even though I don't even really like golf, sounds kind of appealing.
Golfing, steak dinners, that's not a tough sales job.
Like a good idea. Like, I can do that.
Winning the sale is difficult, but I think for some people, the maintenance, basically, there should be a sales maintenance title that's just
can
that.
I just do the sales maintenance and let somebody else do it?
I guess that's customer experience.
Holistic,
really.
It's a very holistic approach to how you're clients or customers are interacting with you. And so here's an example. For example, I went online a couple of weeks ago to buy some new running shoes because I like to run. And there's one site I like to go to. It's Holabird Sports, Holabird. There's a shout out to them. They've got great products. And I always buy my running shoes from them. I've been doing so for the past 10, 15 years or so. And they always have great deals. And I kind of wait for the pair I want to go on sale. And then I usually pick them up. But I know whenever I go to their website to browse their shoes and see what I want to get, this is a B2C example, but it still kind of applies. I get their remarketing ads like crazy. And so like any website I go on, there's my shoes popping up on a remarketing ad. And they're pretty obnoxious about it, honestly. you just get a ton. So if you went to their website, you will have their ads following you for quite some time. So usually I got to clear out my cash, clear out my cookies, And that way I don't see the ads as much popping up anymore. But I do like their stuff.
I was going to say, and at this point, have you usually already bought a pair of shoes from them recently? Because if you go, this is like they want you to buy again.
Usually I'm like, hey, my shoes are getting – these ones I have, I need to get some new ones. Let me start browsing, see what's out there, what's on sale. And so I might spend a few weeks to buy a new pair of running shoes. I'll check a few places. I might even say, hey, I'll maybe want to try a different brand, and so I'll go try them on somewhere or something like that. But I do what most people are doing, where they try it on at the store sometimes and then buy it online for a cheaper price. But anyway, so I get these. That's right.
Those poor brick and mortar places.
But for the most part, I know which ones I like now, so I can just go there and order them and have a good experience. And they ship for free, and it comes fast. Anyway, it's really good. And so this other day, last week, I bought a pair. And I still got the ads coming even after I bought the shoes. And so that was kind of annoying. I'm like, okay, listen, I've already purchased. I'm done. Come on, stop with the ads. And it's usually every 6 months or so that I'm buying a new pair of running shoes or something. But then I got an email from them as well. And the email was actually great because it had the actual pair that I really wanted, which I didn't buy because they were still full price on sale. And so what I actually ended up doing is buying that pair too. I'm going to return the other ones as soon as I get them. So that marketing worked for me. That actually worked for them as well, even though it's somewhat obnoxious. But it made me think, because we do remarketing ads as well. And anyone that's visiting our site will probably see an employee engagement survey ad pop up on their browser sometime in the future. But I thought, well, what am I doing to our current customers? You know, what type of ads am I running? I know I have one that says, hey, would you like a comparative quote for an employee engagement survey? And I know that won't resonate with our customers. And so that made me think about their journey with my company. Now I'm still hitting them up to buy from me when I should be messaging something that's a little softer, maybe a white paper or a webinar or something like that. So anyway, that just got me thinking about a B2C, my B2B approach to this customer experience that people are having.
That's right. A good example.
So really the shoe company should, instead of sending you just a general ad for the shoes, if they sent you, you know, they would notice, oh, every 6 months, if we send him a discount on,
shoes,
that's the time frame for him is to say, hey, are you ready for a new pair of shoes yet? Or something like that, rather than treating you like a new person constantly.
Well, also to me, what surprises me about your story there, and of course this is, again, B2C, but you've been buying with them for how long? You said like 10, 15 years?
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's face it. That was like, I mean, it wasn't pre-internet, but it was very beginning. So you've been buying with them online for a long time. You're clearly a loyal customer. You just gave a shout out to them on a podcast, right? I mean, that's you're a pretty loyal customer. So it seems to me like they're kind of missing the boat on the way that they could be activating you, because to me, you shout out super fan to me, and being able to identify the customers who are like really loyal and engaged and there with you, you can activate those customers in ways that you cannot activate, you know, your average client.
And so, yeah, they would know that, hey, it's been six months. Are you really looking for shoes again kind of thing would be maybe an email or something, but yeah, so, you know, and I think they're doing a good job. It's just that they're a little bit overboard on their remarketing ads that drive me a little crazy. But it just makes you think as a marketer.
It's kind of general. They're treating everybody the same.
Yeah, right. So it's just, again, thinking what is and that's really segmenting your customers, right? Knowing your audience, knowing the type of buyers you have, their titles, their levels, their interests, things like that. And then creating those segments and developing your marketing campaigns accordingly. So. But because you want them, you know, maybe there's a few different customer journeys or experiences that you can define as a marketer for the type of people you have, and you can customize your campaigns accordingly to those groups.
So something that has come up recently when I've been, you know, researching and looking at segmentation is being able to pinpoint where people are in the kind of brand awareness journey as well, like kind of whether or not they're really, you know, again, from super fan down to being like, oh, we just barely have heard about you or we've never heard about you. I'm just seeing this email or this ad for the first time. Do you have any good tactics on kind of obviously we have like things like lead scoring. So to me, it kind of sounds like we would just apply the same idea of lead scoring to the marketing levels, which of course is actually something we're doing here. And I don't even know if that's really in your area of expertise, so I might be going off here, but you tell me.
Well, no. Yeah, we do that quite often. So we know that brand awareness is really critical to kind of get people to accept you as a legitimate maybe provider. So we know, for example, with employee engagement surveys that we sell, we know it's pretty competitive. They're going to go out and get bids from probably three or four other people and compare side to side and have a few people come in for an on-site sales presentation. So we know we have to have enough branding to really support the idea that, hey, if this HR person recommends us to come in for a presentation, the rest of the team has never heard of DecisionWise before, they might be a little skeptical about why that HR person actually invited us in the first place. And so their credibility is a little bit on the line when they take a risk on us if they don't know us. And so, yeah, branding is really important. But the way we try to get to the next step, you know, they might find us through a web search or something like that, is, you know, we conduct webinars a lot. We do podcasting as well and some videos. So it's your other content pieces that helps warm them up and create that affinity. So it goes from awareness to now they have some affinity with you. They've heard you. They've kind of become more familiar with your customer or with your consultants or whoever you have there. So they have more of an awareness, not only of your brand, but of who you are as people and what your value proposition is. And so that's how we try to get them closer through the pipeline, is we do webinars a lot just on employee engagement surveys, for example. And as we get HR people attending that, they become more educated about how to run a survey effectively. But also now when they're in the market to buy, they will think of DecisionWise and we'll get a chance to hit for the next opportunity.
Yeah, that makes me also think, I really want to talk about, the employee engagement specifically, but you keep making me think. And that makes me think here, in my position as the head of marketing at Mountaintop Data, we walk a very thin line between, we want to market to our marketing audience, but then once they've been tossed over to sales, at what point do we continue to engage them? How much? But what you've just said makes me think that I would be really interested in specifically targeting not those specific contacts that are working with sales, but maybe all of the other contacts around them and kind of targeting them with our brand so that when they come into the room and say, hey, DecisionWise is cool. I'm interested. Okay, they probably wouldn't say that. But I'm interested in using DecisionWise. Here's this company that I've found that would be useful.
Right.
They won't be like, decision what? They'll
right.
be like, oh, wait, I've heard of that company.
You don't want to over-target them once they're already in sales hands.
Right, but then you also don't want to,
you don't want to annoy them.
Right, the same kind of idea.
Sales is always
telling
you, stay away, don't annoy them once we're talking to them.
Right. Sales is like, back off.
So do you want me to talk about employee experience, or do you have some more questions about customer experience?
I really do. Yeah. No, I think that's it. I just am, you're getting my brain thinking. But I'm really interested in this parallel because, as a marketer, obviously, your brand, I love branding. That's like my baby. But, I totally get where this buy-in for the employees needs to exist. But I think I'm just drastically under, I just have no idea how big of a difference this can make and why it would really be that big of a deal. So, and I don't mean that to sound rude, but like, tell me, why is this necessary? Why is it helpful? What does this do for me?
Yeah. So this realm really has been so marketing isn't so concerned with employee experience. That's HR or that's management or whatever. They're all concerned with keeping employees happy and working hard and taking care of customers. But the tie is really acute because your customers are directly impacted by the experience they have with your employees. And so once they get on the phone with them or once they have any kind of interaction with them, the employees are kind of the face of the company. And so those poor interactions a customer might have are a direct result of their interaction with an employee who might have had a bad interaction at work of some sort. So the employee experience is very similar to a customer's experience. It's that employee journey through the company where they join the company, they have that onboarding experience, they meet their boss, they meet their coworkers, maybe they attend the first company event, they get their new computer, and then is it a pain to get set up with tech support or did it work the first day? They go through their training, have their first performance review, and so on and so forth. So during all of those touch points through an employee's tenure at a company, there's ups and downs, right? So maybe the onboarding experience wasn't that great, or maybe it was wonderful, but now their job isn't as great as they thought it would be. And so there's all these expectations that you're trying to manage. And so when we talk about the employee experience, we define it as the sum of the perceptions employees have about their interactions with the organizations in which they work. And so it's pretty straightforward and pretty basic. But that level of engagement, for example, or satisfaction with their work or willingness to kind of go above and beyond is affected by all these different touch points or experiences that they have.
So it's kind of, would they recommend a friend work there? Would they recommend a company to a friend? Would they recommend the company they're working at? We all know companies where, you hear people saying like, oh yeah, I'm selling this, but I would never buy it, or I would never recommend it to a friend. This is just my job. I can't, they have the posters all around the office about how great a place it is to work, and people just make fun of the posters and that kind of stuff.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, everyone can kind of share their favorite office show moment, at work that they've experienced as well. So as we look at it, one way to think about the employee experience is the operating environment for your people. And so as you think of your operating environment, your operating system on your computer, whether you're a Mac user or a PC or whatever, how does that operating environment affecting your people and helping them to either run efficiently or inefficiently? And so when it's properly structured, then you're able to attract, retain, and then engage your employees to really be effective at work. So we wrote a book on the employee experience that we released at the beginning of the year now, and we've been doing a lot of work and training and seminars and things around it. And it's kind of this holistic approach, again, to your human capital. So employee engagement is one component, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But there's other components here. We see three distinct components or contracts that are part of the employee experience. And so this first one is the brand contract. And so much like with marketing, where you're kind of branding your company, you're also branding your company to your employees. And so this is how your organization is viewed by potential employees that are going to work for your company. And so it determines how well the company or team is positioned as an employer of choice. And it's also measured by understanding what initially attracted employees to work for your organization. And you can measure this. We measure this with companies all the time. But, you know, why did you join this company? And there's a variety of reasons. Maybe, you know, within the area, you know, you had a great reputation as a great company. You know, you're the one that everyone wants to work for. It just looks great on a resume. Maybe you had a reputation as having, you know, great benefits, great compensation, a cool working environment. Or maybe you were a stable organization that someone knew they could join and work for the rest of their lives. Maybe you were a great part-time opportunity for someone that wanted to earn extra money either while at school or as a second income earner from home. So there's a variety of different reasons why employees look at your company, and your brand impacts their willingness to submit an application, basically.
So when you say employers, are you talking mostly about kind of the sales team as brand ambassadors, as the people that are having the majority of interaction with the B2B customers?
Well, no, so this is different than customers. So this is kind of taking the customer experience and applying it to all the employees in the organization.
Okay.
And so as a company, if you're trying to grow and attract and just hire more people, separate from marketing or sales or anything like that, how do they view your company as a brand, as a potential employer? What's your brand as a potential employer is what they're asking or looking for. So it kind of gets to the thing you mentioned before where you said, well, would you recommend this company as a great place to work? You know, do you get a lot of employee referrals from your employees when there's a job posting or something like that? So you're trying to see how attractive you are to potential employees.
Interesting. So I've got a question I want to tease here, and then we're going to go on a quick break. So think about this question, and then after the break, I'll hit you up for it. But if you could give us a couple tips for kind of, or give our listeners a couple tips for what, just a couple things people might not think about to help have engaged and happy employees that are going to be better kind of ambassadors for the company. So, all right, we'll go on break here, and then we'll come back with that in just a minute.
Our episode today is brought to you by Engageo. If you're thinking about ABM and not sure how to start or which plays to run, Engageo just came out with a new playbook for marketers featuring 16 plays that have been tested in the field to get results. Check them out at engageo.com/orchestration.
All right, we're back from the break here with Charles Rogel, Alicia Garvalia on the Elephant Test. And I think before the break, Charles, I was asking you a question about tips for happy and effective employees that will make better brand ambassadors.
Yeah, so the idea here is that you need to be able to manage kind of these three contracts you have with your employees. And so the employee experience is about the brand contract, this transactional contract, and psychological contract. To get really happy, engaged employees, a lot of that deals with the psychological contract that you make with your employees. And so that revolves around employees feeling like they have meaning, autonomy, growth, impact, and then connection in their job. And so as a manager, if you're looking to have an engaged workforce, practices like being a micromanager, for example, kill engagement within a company because it takes away people's autonomy. They can't make decisions on their own. So you want to make sure you have those pieces in place where they're feeling like, yeah, I feel like I'm making a difference. I'm having impact here. I'm growing professionally. I'm learning new things. This job has meaning to me. I have the autonomy I need to do, make decisions. And also I have a connection with people here. And so those five factors, when they're in place, create a really engaged workforce and people that really want to be, you know, like the brand ambassadors for your product and your organization. So that's kind of the high level piece.
The high level one is don't crush their souls.
Don't crush their souls.
Sometimes the recommendation to companies is get out of the way. Stop making it difficult for people to be engaged in your company.
I've got to put that on the back of my door in my office so I see it. It'll just say, don't be a soul crusher.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I mean, what he doesn't know is that on the other side of his door, we've hung a sign that says Soul Crusher.
Soul Crusher. No.
So as an example here, you know, when we were growing and I was lucky enough to hire a marketing assistant, I got an intern from BYU here that helped me out. He was a great guy. He was actually in OBHR at BYU studying, but he applied and accepted our marketing position here at DecisionWise for
OBHR. What's that?
So organization behavior and human resources.
Oh, okay.
And so that's great. He wanted to have experience in a company like ours to kind of go into that field eventually someday. But he was good at marketing as well and good with social media and a lot of those other things that I was looking for. And so it was a good fit at the time. And he got really good. He was very efficient. He could execute really well. He came up with good ideas. He was actually good at content and things like that, too. All these good marketing things. And we worked really well together for a good year and a half, almost 2 years, I think, he was here.
I'm hearing a butt coming on. There it is. There's the butt. I was like, this is good.
Exactly. As he got to the end of his schooling, though, he was looking to say, okay, what am I going to do now that I'm graduating and growing up? And, you know, marketing just wasn't his thing anymore. He kind of lost the passion for what we had before. He wasn't really finding much meaning in it. He wasn't growing anymore because of this. You know, just running the email campaigns wasn't exciting anymore. You know, coming up with new ideas there just wasn't doing it. He didn't feel like he was having much of an impact on what was going on. So I could see pretty clearly that those factors that really engage people were I was losing them. And so he was open with it, and we would just have open conversations all the time. And so eventually he found another internship in California at Cisco and went and did that. And it was a good amicable, you know, separation. And we got a lot of value from both ends of it. But it was, you know, obvious as I looked at those factors that he just wasn't going to work out. And it wasn't really, even if I offered him a position in marketing here, a full-time position, it wasn't his thing. He just wasn't going to be happy there. And so that's when we realized it was time for a change.
That does speak to the necessity of really just being able to recognize when you are losing someone mm-hmm. and not try to hold on, because that makes everyone miserable.
Yeah, I think in sports they say a lot of players will say like, oh, when you're not having fun anymore, that's when it's time to retire. It's
right.
Kind of silly in sports, but it makes sense in a job. Like for the boss, when your employee's not having fun anymore, it's time for them
to
move on.
It's time to retire them.
Whether they know it or not even, it's you or to get them kind of engaged again. Because if they're not engaged and if they're not enjoying themselves, you're going to be losing a lot of what you really need in your brand.
Yeah, and so I'm just trying to think, you know, the way to apply kind of employee experience to a marketing situation is really, if you have a marketing team, you really need to look at the members of your team and how engaged they are either in the job that they have and what they're doing, and find out what makes them tick, right? What's meaningful to them? What do they enjoy about the work that they're doing? If they're over your email program or social media or whatever tasks they're engaged in, what do they want to do after that, right? Do they want to write more? Do they want to be over content? So it's important as a marketer, you really kind of tap into the passion that they have and kind of keep that flame burning. Otherwise, you might lose them. If you just ignore them and say, hey, execute this email campaign like you've been doing, they might just eventually burn out and want to do something else.
Right, and you'll definitely lose quality, you know, a quality results mm-hmm. because they're just not engaged.
Yeah.
So being brand ambassadors, something that I struggle with between sales and marketing is, you know, I may possibly fall more on the side of the micromanagement. have to curb that. But I tend to want to brand and curate all of the emails and everything that, and obviously I'm not going to be able to write every salesperson's email or anything, but I want to be able to go in and say, like, here's my brand stamp on it.
Mm-hmm. Control the voice of everybody in the company.
I mean, that's putting it nicely. I think somebody called it the brand police, which killing me a little bit inside. But I mean, it's true though. Sometimes like we want to make sure that we are in brand voice, but where is that line between like, and I guess actually that's really what you're speaking to is like, if you can activate your employees to be those brand ambassadors, then you don't have to have marketing or someone, brand police, come in at every second and every, you come around every corner to be like, this is our brand, you must stick to this, because they will have already bought into it, mm-hmm. and they will be ready to kind of distribute it.
So I guess to jump on the back, what she's saying, does that come from like, how do you mold them without, mm-hmm. you know, crushing their souls and remolding them? Is that just kind of corporate culture and training and finding the right people? Like, cause you can't force something we always say is you can't pay somebody to care. Uh-huh. You can't force somebody to be engaged. Like you need to be engaged and
however,
care right now.
Shame is free.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
You can't pay somebody to care, but shame is free. Yes. Yep.
No, I'm kidding. Anyway. So yeah. How do you do that?
So part of it is, being able to establish kind of a framework that they can work within that still gives them some autonomy and ability to kind of, share their voice, without feeling so constricted by the branding or the marketing, whatever content that they can only share what's given to them by marketing. And that's really kind of demotivating. But if they're able to kind of add their voice to it or their personality to it, then they take more ownership for it. They feel more willing to kind of use and promote the, you know, the rest of the things too. So it's being collaborative to an extent. I know you'll always have those guys that are just kind of the mavericks out there and want to do their own thing or don't like anything that marketing gives them. And those will always be difficult cases. But if you can give them that framework and also help paint the vision for them, then they'll get on board. And usually the vision comes from, they want to know, show me the data, show me that this works, you know. And so if you have more of that to share with them, they definitely will use it.
Speaking their language.
I guess as long as they're good also, it's always easier to give people more rope as long as you know they're going to be good at it. So when you hire the right people mm-hmm. that are capable, it's a lot easier to give them some free rein.
Yeah.
Because you know, you're not constantly worried about them. You don't have to micromanage. You won't micromanage if you don't have to, kind of.
Right.
So going back to the psychological contract, you laid out some really specific things, and that seems to speak to being able – that if you're able to tap into these things, then you're able – I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the transactional contract seems like the very basic level we give you money for.
Right,
work.
Yeah, exactly.
Am I wrong on that one?
But it's really important because it drives really satisfaction. And so satisfaction is a driver of attracting people and retaining your people. So if you're paying them well, you work in a good building, you know, there's free lunch on Fridays or whatever or other perks – so the perks really help to drive retention. So I'm less likely to leave the company because I'm so satisfied here with, you know, the pay perks and everything else that I get. But they won't engage you. They won't motivate you to work harder or do more. You know, once you get that initial bump and raise, the excitement wears off and you're back to doing what you've always done. It's really those psychological factors, that those engagement factors around meaning, autonomy, growth, impact, and connection. So we wrote a book on this too. It's called Magic, and it talks about these five drivers of engagement. Those are the things that really inspire people to do their best and to work hard.
So is this – I mean, are you talking about things like Parfait Tuesday or something like that? Is it include that, right, but and more? Or
that's a satisfaction element. Well, yeah. So in some cases, you see companies, especially here in Utah where I'm located, there's a lot of high-tech companies moving in. And so we work with a lot of clients here that are struggling because they're trying to attract and retain developers and programmers. But the company up the street has this nice gym in their facility, and they have a nice soccer field outside, and they're offering free lunch every day. And so this perk war starts up, and it happens in Silicon Valley as well, and with, you know, Google and all the rest of them, where there's this war to attract and retain people with perks, but that's only half the equation, right? So it's like, yeah, that's nice for the first couple months, but then you realize that my boss is a jerk, or I don't have autonomy to really make any decisions here, you know, that I'm not really feeling connected to the people I work with in some way. So that's where the...
So those are kind of negative perks. You have your positive perks.
Right.
You say, you know, you have the gym membership and stuff like that. But then there's a negative perks like, who's my manager?
Exactly. Yeah.
Have you seen the movie The Circle?
Yes. It's been a few years, though. The horror movie? Or no?
Nope. That's the ring.
You're like, what's the connection here? I don't know where you're going with this.
It's about social media, and it's really more about the pervasive and invasiveness of social media. But it's also really interesting because it does kind of mirror a lot of the social media companies, which also have all these perks. And it's just, anyway, you find it really interesting. Anyone who wants to take these lessons and apply them to a company with some really great examples, mm-hmm. go watch The Circle with Emma Watson.
Okay. Now, what about so many companies? I don't know how they do it. Would you say this is good or bad? But there's so many companies I hear about that have like an at-work drinking culture where there's a lot of drinking going on. A lot of these technology companies, and sometimes you hear about it when it goes wrong, but I talk to friends that are in some of these companies and it's like they're drinking with their bosses every day in the office almost. How does that figure into this? Is that a good thing, a bad thing, depending on how it's managed?
You know, from an HR policy or legal standpoint, that can be a nightmare or be a very, you know, HR, I assure you, probably doesn't like it. They're just like, that's a lawsuit waiting to happen, you know.
I just assume they don't have HR departments if they're doing this. I don't know how they do it. No. I just constantly hear about it. There was a big one recently that just got bought, and that was a major part of the buyout was, oh, they had to get rid of the bar in the office, and everybody had to stop being drunk at work, and it was a problem because their employees all kind of got used to it.
Right. If it works, what happens is that kind of becomes ingrained. Not only is it kind of a perk that drives satisfaction, it becomes ingrained as a part of the culture and also a part of we look at it as one of those engagement drivers of connection, right? So it's a real way to build connection, to network, and to feel like you've got each other's back in the organization through, the ability to drink together. So, you know, if you take that away, all of a sudden you take away a satisfaction element, people feel it and it impacts engagement. So you take away free, drinking in the office or free lunch on Friday or something like that. All of a sudden you've got some really disappointed employees and it takes a while to kind of overcome that.
Right. You can give entitlements, but when you try to take them away, it's much worse than the
right.
benefit.
And so that's why you gotta be careful.
So you're saying
you could replace them?
We should replace the Friday ping pong games with Friday beer pong games?
Maybe.
Or no?
Depends on your culture. Yeah. But.
No, I'm kidding. I don't like beer. You know, I did actually work for an agency when I was first starting out, a branding agency, and we did do happy hours on Fridays. But that was with everyone, and it definitely – I mean, especially being an intern there, where I started as an intern, you know, I feel like I got to know the staff and the owners in ways that I just never would have gotten those connections or formed that because I was too busy – we were all too busy working the rest of the time. But just providing that. But it was also just on Friday afternoons, like
and
after
outside
4
the
o'clock.
Office.
It was not outside
of
the
work.
Office. It was not outside the office.
Good happy hour in the office.
Yeah, we'd go into the conference room. And sometimes, you know, if it was someone's birthday, it would be like cupcakes too, but it would be like shots. And
they called it happy hour. That's just called office.
I don't think they did call it happy hour. No. I think I applied that label. No, it was like at 4 o'clock, everyone filed into the conference room.
I was picturing TGI Fridays, and I was like, that's fine. People meet afterwards.
And by the way, I was over 21. I just want to put that up there. I'm not throwing anyone under the bus. But
nobody checked, but she was.
That's probably true. But I do think that it kind of opened things up. And it wasn't so much that the fact that we were drinking. I think it was more of the being able, a set time to socialize, something to look forward to, and also this kind of mixing of like the different stratospheres of the company and being able to go and socialize with people who I might have felt like I wouldn't get. Like that's not a privilege I have.
Sales talks to marketing in a non-confrontational setting. kind of
Right.
Yeah. I didn't mean to sidetrack it all with booze, but basically it's the perks in the office can be a really big part of people being engaged, I guess. And you're saying if there's social perks where people interact with each other, not just, you know, a gym membership or something like that, but things where they'll actually interact with each other, that's even better.
That's right. Yeah. So then it turns into a driver of engagement, whereas a perk in general is something that is, free snacks or whatever, free, you know, drinks or something would be a perk. But if it leads to that type of interaction, then it's more about connection, which drives engagement.
Right. You're kind of building a culture of bonded people.
Yep. That's right.
And then in the middle of that, I get to sit down and be like, yay, everybody loves our brand. Here's our brand. Yay.
Get them drunk and then brainwash them with brands.
Yes, that's exactly.
It. Yeah, that's right. So from a marketing perspective, you know, it's really the culture of your organization has a strong impact on your customers and the experience that they have. And so if you're, it's hard as a marketer if you're working somewhere and people are bummed out or not that engaged or whatever, just not that into their jobs, because, you know, you're trying to really portray and promote, you know, a strong positive image about the company. And if the employees aren't that jazzed about it, then it's a real uphill battle.
But so what you're saying is if the employees aren't that jazzed about it, we need to – it's not like a, you know, crush them into becoming more jazzed, right? It's a, hey, you know, maybe this isn't as a fun environment to work in. Maybe we should fix that. Like it kind of does.
I think Dilbert has a cartoon that says if morale doesn't improve, beatings will continue or will escalate or something like that.
Exactly.
Is that what's hanging up in your office?
Yeah. No. I thought that was an office manual. I didn't know it was a joke.
But yeah, I mean, it definitely requires some reflexivity to be like, oh, hey, maybe we should actually look at this. And I like that.
So I feel like we're kind of covered two things. One was the customer's journey or path through marketing and sales and then back around and around again. And then the other is kind of the employee's experience and their journey through interviewing and hiring and onboarding and working there that turns them into a kind of a good brand ambassador for the company.
That helps the customer journey. Ding, ding, ding.
So I think when we started here, I was a little bit – I'm not sure if I know what this is that we're going to be talking about today.
Right.
I think I have a pretty good grasp on it. Did I nail it there? How close am I?
You did. Yeah, you're exactly right. And those two, the customer experience and employee experience, are really intertwined in terms of you know, delivering a good service or brand or whatever you're talking about. Those two are intertwined. In order to deliver a good customer experience, you need to have a good employee experience so your employees – actually deliver a good customer experience.
And of course, these three, the brand contract, psychological contract, and the transactional contract are also the same, are the same between employee and also customer. You would have those three things as well.
That's right. Yeah. So they feel the same thing, right? They interact with your brand at a high level, and that kind of takes them into maybe a transaction with your company. And that transaction could be they buy something off your website and submit a credit card. But what is the psychological experience that they're having as well? You know, is it, was it, you know, did they feel good after that interaction?
Right. Which is, I mean, this is so silly and sort of getting off track, but I think that's why the non-brick and mortar stores, if they're doing it correctly, it's great. And if they're not, these online stores, when they're sending you packages, if they're actually putting thought into that package and what it looks like and what it feels like to open up that package, they're on the ball. And if they're not... Yeah. They're missing it because you don't get the experience of going into a brick and mortar store and being like, oh, or for that matter, you know, for our SaaS listeners or for our other, you know, between going in and actually dealing face to face with a client versus just having an online experience when they actually get the product, whatever you're selling to them, if you can make them feel excited about it, that's
right, yeah. Right. Yeah, we always say that when I'm talking to my tech people, they don't quite understand that when we deliver a product, it doesn't only need to be technically good, but it needs to kind of look and feel good,
too. I want some tissue paper in there.
But it's all good. And we say, no, but it's the – I remember when I was in high school, I worked in a pizza place, and I didn't learn hardly anything from there. But one thing I took away was they taught me that they put – When you're putting the ingredients on, they put a different kind of cheese. I don't remember what it was, but there was a special expensive cheese that was delicious, I guess. And they put that in the very middle of the pizza. He said, you put this, and then you put the regular mozzarella, whatever it is. I don't even know what – you put everything else around on it, but you put this one cheese in the very middle. And he said, the reason you put this cheese in the middle is that's the first bite, and that's the most important.
Oh,
so you don't put that cheese everywhere. You don't put it nowhere, but you make sure you don't randomly put it somewhere. You put it in the first bite. So it's kind of that experience that people have has to be good, and especially that first impression experience. And I guess it works in our hiring here. We do it in a couple places, but you don't want people to dread coming back to you. I think with sales, when marketing's feeding people to sales and then we're going to help bring them back around, you know, you don't want people to not interact with you as a company because they're afraid to talk to you because they had a bad experience last time. And they know they need this, but maybe not from you because the experience they just have a gut feeling, even no desire to answer the phone or to pick the phone up kind of.
Well, I have one random question for you. Mm-hmm. If you had a marketing superpower, what would it be?
Oh, wow.
Marketing superpower, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, of course it'd be nice to see in the future and understand what decisions you're about to make if they work out. But
There you go.
You can pick anything.
That could be a superpower.
Don't pick invisibility. That's bad for marketing.
That's bad for marketing.
No, it definitely would be, because there's sometimes, you know, you take a risk in marketing. You're always placing bets here and there. It's like you're walking into a casino and you're trying to figure out, okay, is this one going to pay off? Let's see. Let's test it and see if it works. And so,
yeah. If you know where it's going to land, you know it's going to pay off or not. That would be great.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. But I mean, seeing any point in the future is kind of cheating. How far ahead would you need to be able to see?
Well, I mean, you don't want to see to your death. That's not fun.
But you need to see an hour, a week, a month, just 15
also,
minutes.
If you did this, would you also then go buy a lot of lottery tickets?
Yeah, you can only use it for marketing.
Only
for marketing.
Yeah, I would only need maybe, in some cases, I only need an hour, but I think 3 months would be a good time frame.
You'd be getting ready to send an email and just be like, never mind, they're not going to click.
Hey, that would save you a lot of work.
I think it's because our sales cycle is usually about 3 months. And so then I would know if any of my marketing activities actually turned into sales after it generated leads and that sort of stuff. So 3 months would be adequate.
Yeah. I want to see. So you'd need to be able to see one sales cycle in the future,
right.
Basically.
Yeah, that's all I need. Just give me that.
Yeah. I want to see this movie starring Nick Cage now. Yeah. They always have these powers and they never use them for anything that makes sense. It's like, oh, I can see the future, but I'm not going to gamble or anything.
I'm not going to gamble.
It's silly.
All righty. Well, I feel a little bit more enlightened now in terms of the crossover between employee experience and customer engagement, or vice versa. And
Charles, this has been great. We'd love to have you on again sometime if you'd like. I think there's a lot more to talk about here. We just kind of went on and on. I think Alicia and I both know so much more about this now, and hopefully our audience does as well.
But you know, if our audience is interested in learning more about Charles' company, they can go find DecisionWise at decision-wise.com. Just a little bit more about DecisionWise. It is a management consulting and survey firm specializing in leadership and organizational development and employee engagement. DecisionWise services include employee engagement services, 360-degree feedback, leadership coaching, talent assessment, and organizational development, with a primary mission to transform the employee experience. And that is at decision-wise.com. Charles, really quick, you talked about a couple different books that would maybe be helpful to our audience. Where can they find those?
Yeah, so if you want to learn more, they're both on Amazon. One is called The Employee Experience, How to Attract, Retain and Engage your Workforce. And the other one is Magic, the 5 Keys to Unlock the Power of Employee Engagement. Those are both on Amazon or any other retailer. And of course, you can go to our website too at decision-wise.com and see links and things like that. I wanted to make a special shout out and thank Mountaintop Data. I've been working with them for probably a couple of years now. My rep is Jay Gilmore. He does a great job. I think I've cleaned him out a few times of all the HR contacts that he has, and but we had a great working relationship. So thanks, you guys.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank
and
you.
The shoe company, mention them one more time and they've got to send you a free pair.
Yeah,
Come on.
I think they're going to have to – they might have to pay us.
Free pair of shoes.
Holabird Sports, Holabird.
We want a free pair of shoes for Charles Holabird, okay?
Hey, send me one too, by the way. Size 9.5.
Okay. And if you would like to talk to DecisionWise on Twitter, it's at DecisionWise. And you can email Charles at crogel, R-O-G-E-L, at decision-wise.com. And that wraps it up for us. Thank you for coming on with us, Charles.
Thank you. It's been great.
Excellent. Thanks.
Until next time.
See you all next time.
A quick word from our sponsor.
Effective marketing starts with good data. At Mountaintop Data, we are experts at developing and maintaining high-quality marketing lists. With tens of millions of highly accurate records and more data being added daily, we're sure to have the contacts you need to be in front of. Learn more at mountaintopdata.com.
Hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Elephant Test. Check out the show notes at elephanttest.com. Thank you so much for listening from all of us here at the Elephant Test. Until next time.